So, just to pick up where we left off last time, okay. So, to remind you, there were two regimes that we wanted to study. Okay, so we wanted to study the regime that was near equilibrium, okay, corresponding to, the regime where interaction rates are much, much faster than the expansion rate. This will mostly apply, for the early universe. And then we also wanted to then later on consider the opposite regime of being out of equilibrium. And of course, this applies in the opposite regime where the interaction rate is slow compared to Hubble. Okay, yeah. And so last time we said that for the early universe, we'll mostly focus on this regime, and then for the late universe, we'll mostly focus on the opposite regime. Okay, so first let's think about this, this first regime of being near equilibrium. Okay, and so to remind you, last time, we reviewed that in equilibrium, the distribution function takes a really simple thermal form. Okay, so we wrote it as a function only of the energy, and the standard result is that this is 1 over E to them. E minus mu divided by temperature plus or minus 1. Okay, where the plus and minus 1 applies for fermions and for bosons. Okay, and so therefore, using this expression, we can now work out all of the elements of the stress energy tensor, which enters the Friedmann equations. Okay, so for example, let's just start off with some easy example. Okay, so let's start off computing the number density of particles with this distribution function. Okay, and so as we said last time, the number density of particles at some location x is just some integral over this distribution function. So integrating over all possible momenta. Okay, and then just the number at each momentum state. Okay. So since this depends only on E, which depends only on the magnitude of the momentum vector, we can therefore trivially do the angular parts of this integral. Okay, so I can just replace this d3p with just 4 pi e squared dp. Right, some of these 4s and pis cancel some of these 2s and pis. Okay, so this reduces down to g over 2 pi squared, integral of squared dp, f of e, right? Okay, where again, this is, the energy E is implicitly a function of the magnitude p. Okay, next, let's use the fact that the energy is related to the momentum by e squared is equal to p squared plus m squared. So therefore, E dE is equal to P dP, right? So therefore, in our P squared dP, okay, one of those P's will turn into, E dE. Okay, so this is just simply P over 2 pi squared, integral of, and now we'll go from M to infinity of root of e squared minus m squared e. And now I'll just write out explicitly the distribution function e to the e over t plus or minus 1. Where for now, for simplicity, I'll just assume that the chemical potential mu is 0. Okay. It's not hard, it's not hard to redo this for non-zero chemical potential, but just for simplicity for now, I'll just limit myself to this simplifying regime. Okay? Okay, so again, like a very simple expression for the number density of particles. So you can just evaluate this, but there's two interesting limiting cases that we'll want to consider. Okay, so first let's just look at those two interesting limiting regimes. Okay, so those regimes will be the relativistic regime. Okay, so that just means the regime where the temperature is much, much larger than the rest mass of this species. And then the opposite regime, of course, will then be, you know, non-relativistic, or the cold regime, where temperature is very small compared to the rest mass. But first let's just focus on this relativistic case. So now let's just evaluate this integral. So to facilitate evaluating it, let's just change variables from energy to something dimensionless. Okay, so I'll write this as x, some dimensionless number, times temperature. Okay, this then enables us to pull out all the dimensionful parameters from the integral. Okay, so therefore, the number density reduces to, g over 2 pi squared. Okay, so we have 1, 2, 3 e's, giving us 3 temperatures out front. Okay, and then we're just left with some dimensionless integral, which is following. All this over e to the x plus or minus 1. So now we're focusing on this regime where the temperature is very large compared to the rest mass. Therefore, I'll assume that this m over t is tiny, and therefore this will approximately be equal to the same integral, just replacing m over t with 0. Okay, so you can see that nothing diverges when m over t approaches 0. Okay, so right, you know, it's all well behaved. Therefore, this is approximately equal to the same thing. So t cubed, again, times a bunch of numbers, g over 2 pi squared, go from 0 to infinity of x squared dx over e to the x plus or minus 1. Okay, so let's just think physically about this. Okay, so you can see that for these relativistic species, the number density of particles just scales like the cube of the temperature. That should make intuitive sense, right? Because in the distribution function, you know, in the regime where the mass is negligible, can be ignored, and the only dimensionful parameter affecting the distribution function is the temperature, right? So therefore, this number density can, n can therefore depend only on temperature. The dimensions of temperature in our units, okay, are equal to 1 over the dimensions of length. So therefore, just on dimensional grounds, we know that n has to scale like t cubed, right? So it's just t cubed multiplied by a bunch of numbers. So this integral is easy to work out. I was planning to actually do it for you, but since I'm so far behind from last time, I think I'll skip the actual evaluation. I'll just tell you the answer. Okay. So for bosons with the minus sign, all of this just reduces just down to a zeta function. So it's just 2 times the Riemann zeta function. I don't know how to draw a zeta, so we'll just pretend that that's a zeta. Maybe I will spell out zeta. No, okay, no, I'll try again. Zeta of 3. my apologies. So that was for bosons with the minus sign. And then for fermions with the plus sign, we get the exact same answer. Okay, again, 2 zeta of 3, but then multiplied out front by 3/4. Okay. So therefore, the final answer that we get in the end is that the number density, okay, for these relativistic particles in equilibrium is just a very simple expression. It's just given by t cubed, g over pi squared, okay, multiplied by the zeta of 3, and then times 1 for bosons and 3/4 for fermions. And numerically, the zeta of 3 is a number around 1. It's like 1.2, roughly. So that's the number density of particles, of relativistic particles when the chemical potential vanishes. Okay, so that applies for photons. It also should be a pretty good approximation at very, very early times, you know, say temperatures of like hundreds of GeV before the electroweak transition. Okay, you know, for like, I mean, right, you know, so for particles like leptons, even quarks. Okay, so good. So that's the number of particles. Another important thing we have to know is the energy density, okay, because that's one of the terms in the stress sensor. The expression for the energy density is the exact same integral. We just have one extra power of E inside the integrand, okay? But evaluating it is really simple. I'll skip all the steps and just tell you the final answer. Okay, and so the energy density, okay, will scale how with temperature? T to the fourth, right? You all see that, right? Number was like T cubed. Therefore, energy density has to be that times one more power of T. So T to the fourth, again, with G. There's also now another zeta function that appears. So it's not zeta of 3, it's zeta of 4. Okay, because of the extra E appearing. Zeta of 4 evaluates actually to a number, pi to the fourth over 90. Okay, which then cancels some of the pi's appearing out front. And so the final answer boils down to times pi squared over 30. Okay, and then times 1 for bosons. And then instead of 3/4, we get 7/8 for fermions. Okay, so very simple. One useful thing to know is the average energy for each particle. Okay, we can compute that just by taking the ratio of this energy density to the number density. Okay, that's the average energy per particle. Okay. So this scales out with temperature, yeah, obviously like T, and then this ratio of pi's and things, okay, it works out to numerically about 2.7 times T for bosons and 3.15 E for fermions. Okay, but either way, roughly speaking, okay, the average energy per particle for a relativistic species is around 3 times the temperature. Okay? Okay, good. So that's how relativistic species behave in equilibrium. Really easy, right? Very obvious. All of you can evaluate these integrals, right? Good. So now let's do the other regime, which is non-relativistic particles. Okay, where we have T much, much less than M. Okay, so we'll call this like the cold regime. Okay, so right. So again, we'll start with the. I missed one more thing. So in the stress sensor, besides the energy density, we also have the pressure appearing. Okay, and the pressure, again, is the exact same integral, but now just weighted by p squared over 3e instead of e. Okay, for relativistic particles, p squared over 3e. Simplifies, okay, so for massless particles, let's say, you know, relativistic, how are P and E related? Do you remember?
PC is equal to E.
Yeah. Sorry, say again?
PC is equal to E.
That's right, yeah. And we're using units where C is 1, so therefore this is just E over 3. Okay, so therefore the integral for the pressure is the exact same as the integral for the energy density, just with some 1/3 out front. So therefore, the pressure is just the energy density divided by 3.
Where did that 3 come from?
Oh, yeah. So last time, right, so we wrote down the expression for the pressure, if you recall.
From kinetic theory, right?
From kinetic theory.
For pressure from kinetic theory, right?
Yeah, so we wrote down the expression for the stress tensor, which I assume that you guys have seen before. You can recall the meaning of the stress tensor. It's like the transport of like momentum, density, flux, you know, say in like the x direction moving in the y direction, right? So it's like P times V. And right, so like, you know, V is like P over E, right? So we get E squared over E. That's for each component. The pressure is 1/3 the trace of that, right? And so, yeah, that's the three. Yeah. You guys have seen that before, right? I mean, the stress tensor, the stress energy tensor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, if you haven't seen it, let me know, because we can talk more about that, but okay. Okay, good. Right. Okay, good. So that was everything we needed to know for relativistic particles. Now let's do the non-relativistic case. Okay. And so we'll start again with the number density, right? This might seem tedious, but it's just worth just doing this at least one time for everyone, just so you see how these integrals work. Okay, so we'll start again with the same expression, the number density. The same thing we had before, g over 2 pi squared of integral m to infinity, g squared minus m squared, e dE of g over t plus or minus 1. Okay. To make our lives a little bit easier, let's multiply top and bottom by following e to the minus e over t, okay, top and bottom. All right, so therefore the bottom now becomes 1 plus or minus e to the minus e over t. So far with me. Okay, so next let's write energy e as equal to the rest mass plus some epsilon, okay? And in a moment, we'll be using that epsilon will be small compared to m. Okay, but for now, this is exact. Okay, so if we replace e with epsilon, then we get that. Okay, so n is therefore, again, the same expression, g over 2 pi squared. We have this e to the e over t out front. I mean over here, so we can pull out the m part of that out front. Okay, so e to the minus m over t, integral now from 0 to infinity, because we're doing d epsilon instead of de, okay, so e squared minus m squared is 2m epsilon plus epsilon squared, right? E is just m plus epsilon. Okay, we pulled out the e to the minus m over t out here, leaving behind e to the minus epsilon over t. And down at the bottom, same thing, we have 1 plus or minus e to the minus m over t, e to the minus epsilon over t. And that's everything, I think, yeah. Okay, so again, we're assuming that the temperature is very small compared to the rest mass. So therefore, this is a tiny number compared to 1. Right? Therefore, I will approximate this by neglecting the correction to 1. Okay? So instead of writing it, let me just erase it. Similarly, okay, right, we have that m is small compared, t is small compared to m. Therefore, this e to the minus epsilon over t in the integrand enforces that over the range of epsilon that that dominates the integral, epsilon is also small compared to m. Does everyone see that?
Could you repeat? What did you say?
Right. So we have that t is small compared to m, and we also have this e to the minus epsilon over t. Okay. So this factor becomes small when epsilon becomes larger than t, and t is small compared to m. Therefore, over the range of integration, okay, in the integrand, the parts that matter for the total integral all have epsilon small compared to m.
We need epsilon less than t for that part to compute to matter, right, in the integral.
Yeah. So the regime where epsilon is large compared to t gets very suppressed.
Yeah.
Okay. Therefore, for the integral, the parts of the integrand that dominate the integral will have epsilon of order t or less, and t is small compared to m.
Okay.
And so therefore, epsilon is small compared to m for the parts of the integrand that matter. Okay, I'm seeing mostly nodding, so good. Okay, so since epsilon is small compared to m, I will approximate this as m. I will approximate this by the leading term. Okay, so I get e over 2 pi squared, e to the minus m over t, rho to infinity, e epsilon, and then actually, I'll pull out the constant factors first. 2m cubed. Integral from 0 to infinity of square root of epsilon e to the minus epsilon over t. Epsilon. Okay? Everyone with me so far? All right, so next I'll make this dimensionless just by pulling out appropriate powers of t. Okay, so I have 1.5 powers of t. Okay, so therefore I'll just write again, you know, like before, that epsilon is equal to some dimensionless number times t. Okay, so I have 3/2 powers of t, so I'll just put that out front inside the square root, and now all these are just x's. And that was just some number. This number you might recognize as the definition of the gamma function. Okay, so this number is just gamma of 3/2, which happens to be expressible in closed form. It's root pi over 2. Okay.
We approximated epsilon small, but we are still integrating from 0 to infinity.
Yeah, because the, you know, the parts where epsilon is not small compared to t there, you know, I mean, they still have this enormous suppression.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So we have like a whole bunch of square roots. Okay, so right. So we have pi's and 2's inside the square root. So multiplying everything out, what we get in the end is e to the minus m over t, again times g, and then mt over 2 pi to the 3/2. Okay? So a nice analytic expression for the non-relativistic regime, okay? For the number density of particles. Okay, so let's compare this to our previous expression for the number density of the relativistic particles, okay? So before we had found that n scales like t cubed. Here we have a very different dependence on t. Okay, so first of all, we have this mt to the 3/2, okay? So m is much bigger than t. Therefore, mt to the 3/2 is much bigger than t cubed, okay? However, we have this enormous exponential suppression, okay? And so this term wins, right? Therefore, the number density of these non-relativistic particles, if they are in equilibrium at this temperature, okay, their number density is far below the number density of relativistic particles at the same temperature in equilibrium. Okay, so this exponential suppression of the number density, this is called Boltzmann suppression, and you'll see this again when you discuss dark matter production. This is the crucial thing. It sets how much relic abundance of dark matter there is. Okay, but for now, the key point is that for a massive species in equilibrium with a mass much larger than its temperature, okay, the abundance gets exponentially suppressed. And of course, physically, that should make sense, right? Okay, so for temperatures that are much below the rest mass of that particle, reactions that can produce that particle get suppressed energetically. Whereas the reverse reactions that can remove those particles, they can still continue, right? Therefore, reactions just drain away all those particles, converting them into lighter species. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. So that's the number density. Next, let's do the energy. The energy density. Okay, so for the energy density, again, the exact same integral, just one extra factor of E. Okay, and again, we have the regime where the energy is going to be dominated by the rest mass, right? Because we are highly non-relativistic. Okay, so therefore, that extra factor of E is just a factor of M. So therefore, what do you think that the energy density will then work out to be? Yeah, it'll be m times the same thing we had here, m times the number density. Okay, and so what we find is that the energy density, the lowest order, is just the mass times the number density. Okay, if we evaluate this to higher order, the next, the leading order correction to this works out to 3/2 nt. Okay, which is just the kinetic energy density, of those particles. Does that make sense? Okay, good. So good. So we have the number density, the energy density. Last thing we needed for the stress energy tensor was the pressure. Okay, so the pressure again, exact same integral. Now instead of E, we have P squared over 3E, like before. And we'll use that squared over 3E. Is E squared minus M squared over 3E, right? You are correct. Thank you. Let's confuse myself. Okay, we had that E was equal to M plus epsilon, or some small epsilon. So let's write this out. So the numerator to leading order is 2M epsilon. The denominator to leading order is 3M. Okay, so therefore P squared over 3E to leading order is just 2/3 epsilon, the small correction from the rest mass, which again we'll write as, yeah, this 2/3 of t times our dimensionless number x. Okay, so therefore now the integral for the pressure is now the exact same as the integral for the energy density. Okay, we have this extra t out front and also this extra x inside the integrand. So let me just write it out. So the pressure, therefore, becomes approximately E over I squared to the minus M over T, square root of 2M cubed. Now we have T to the fifth due to this extra T out front. We have this 2/3, and then integral 0 to infinity of now x to the 3/2 because of this extra x, okay, e to the minus x dx. Okay, so this is also, again, another gamma function.
Gamma 5 by 2.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so this is gamma of 5/2, which is related to gamma of 3/2. Times a factor of 3/2, exactly. Okay, so this 3/2 cancels this 2/3. Okay, we have the same gamma of 3/2 as we had before. We had the same everything as before, just with one extra factor of t. Therefore, what we get is that the pressure is approximately equal to number density. So that's just the ideal gas law. You all saw this, I guess, since high school. Okay, not surprising. One thing just to recall is that since, again, the temperature is very small compared to the mass, pressure is n times t, the energy density was m times t. Therefore, here the pressure is tiny compared to the energy density. Okay, unlike the relativistic case where the pressure was 1/3 the energy density.
You know, maybe it's nice to mention now that you just derived for them y w equals 1/3 for the relative to particles, and now w equals 0 for the matter, which they have been using for the last.
Oh, you've been using that. Good. Good. Right. Excellent. All right. Thanks, Gong. Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah. So very good. Yeah. So we can define w as the ratio of p over rho, and as I said. So for relativistic particles, we derived above that p is rho over 3. So therefore, it's equal to 1/3 for relativistic. And p tiny compared to rho means that w is close to 0 for non-relativistic. Yeah. And then if you solve the Friedmann equations before for a radiation-dominated universe, for a matter-dominated universe, this is why. Okay, all right, thanks. Okay, cool. How are we doing? Terrible. Okay, let's see. Okay, so, good. So now we've worked out all the elements of the stress energy tensor for all the different species, relativistic, non-relativistic, everything. Okay? The total energy density will then be a sum over all the different species that are present. Okay, so let's write that as rho total is the sum over all the species of each one's energy density. Okay? If we assume that every species is in equilibrium, then this will be dominated by the sum over the relativistic species. Right? Because we saw before, the energy density gets Boltzmann suppressed, exponentially suppressed, if the species remains in equilibrium. Okay? Okay, so therefore it's just the sum over all the relativistic ones, as long as everything remains in equilibrium. Soon we will talk about species that fall out of equilibrium. That'll change this result. Okay? But for now, assuming that everything remains in equilibrium, the total therefore is just dominated just by the relativistic species. Okay? So let's just write that out. So we have somewhere on one of these boards the expression for the relativistic energy density, okay? So here, let's just write it out. So this is pi squared over 30, and then a sum over the relativistic bosons of each of their g's multiplied by each of their temperatures to the fourth, and then plus 7/8 of the same thing, sum over all of the relativistic fermions of each of their g's multiplied by each of their temperatures to the fourth. Okay, so here I've written each species I having its own temperature. Now that should seem surprising to you, right? Because I said before, if you're in kinetic, so for species that are in for species that are staying in, in kinetic equilibrium, they must all have the same temperature as each other. Okay, but we'll see later on, very soon. At some point, once the density becomes small enough, species can fall out of equilibrium. Okay, once that happens, they can have different temperatures than each other. They can even have non-thermal distributions. Okay, but for now, let's just consider relativistic species that possibly might have different temperatures as each other. Okay? So it's convenient to write this cumbersome sum in a compact way. Okay, and so it's conventional in the field to write this as some g star, okay, multiplied by this factor pi squared over 30 t to the fourth, where this t is now the photon temperature. Okay? And so So the convention is to express the total energy density in terms of the photon temperature, okay, multiplied by this effective total number of relativistic degrees of freedom, and that's called G star, okay. And so just writing out what G star is, right. So you can just read it off from here, okay. So this G star is just defined to be, the sum over all of the particles. Okay, so sum over the bosons of G weighted by temperature to the fourth, and then plus 7/8 the same thing, sum over the sum over the relativistic fermions of their G's weighted by their temperatures to the fourth.
So there is a four there, right? T star to the power four. Oh yeah, there, that one is four, right?
Sorry, what?
T star or T four?
Yeah, sorry. I'm sorry, my handwriting is awful. Sorry. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. If something is unclear, yeah, stop me and yeah, fix my awful chicken scratch. Okay, good. Right. Okay, good. Yeah, so right. So here I've been yeah, again.
Is there another like T star in there?
Yeah, I think that's the photon temperature.
Is the same in the other term?
What am I doing?
Okay.
Sorry, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, okay, yeah. So by here by T I mean the photon temperature. Yeah, because that's the thing that we directly observe in the CMB. It might be easier just to write this as T gamma everywhere, just to make it very clear that this is always the photon temperature that I'm comparing to. Okay, good. Right. So as species go non-relativistic, okay. As I said, if they stay in equilibrium, their density falls exponentially, and therefore they stop contributing in these sums to G star. Okay, so what that means is that therefore in equilibrium, non-relativistic species stop contributing to the energy density and the and the pressure. Okay, as long as they stay in equilibrium. Okay, so what was the point of defining this G star? The reason why people use this, okay, is that this is useful because it gives us a simple relationship between the total energy density, present in the universe, entering the Friedmann equations, and the underlying temperature. Okay, so if we know how the temperature evolves over time, we therefore know how the total energy density evolves over time, which is important for the Friedmann equations. Right? Okay, good. So therefore, then the next thing we'll do is to work out how the temperature evolves as a function of time using what we just worked out. Okay, so evolution of temperature. All right. Now, in principle, we could work out the evolution of the temperature just using our previous results. Okay, so for example, right, we've just seen how the how the energy density scales with temperature. Here, I'll write out again, rho total, something like G star, T to the fourth times some numerical factors, I squared over 30. Okay. We also have the continuity equation that we worked out last time, which was that d rho dt plus 3h rho plus p equals 0, right? And so therefore, we could, in principle, compute the temperature's time derivative, okay, dt, as just d rho t divided by d rho d temperature. Okay? We have an expression here for rho in terms of temperature. We could just take its derivative, evaluate this denominator, use the continuity equation for the numerator, and therefore just work out how the temperature evolves as a function of time. That turns out to be a bit tedious and cumbersome. And it turns out that there is a more satisfying way to get the same answer. So let me show you that more maybe physically informative way to do the same calculation.
I think problem with this because we have a lot of temperature, right, for bosons and fermions. So it means kind of G star is also like value.
That's the reason why this is kind of tedious. Yeah, that's right. I mean, yeah, this seems very simple, but actually you're right. Because G star is a sum over all the species, and so you have to keep track of all the different species. That's right. Yeah. And that's why we won't do it that way. Okay, so what's the other way to do this? A simpler way of doing the same calculation is to use the fact that the temperature will evolve adiabatically. Okay, so by that what I mean is that the total entropy of all the different species summed up, the total entropy will be conserved. So like the total entropy is capital S. Okay, so the statement is that this is it. So the total entropy will be adiabatically conserved, dS is equal to zero. Okay, so I haven't yet given you an expression for the entropy, so let's just work that out. Okay. To work it out, we'll start from the first law of thermodynamics. I think all of you have seen that, right? Okay, so we'll start from dE plus dV minus dS equals zero. All right, the first law of thermo, where again, this E is the energy in some little like volume of space. Okay, the energy in some little volume of space is just the energy density times that volume of space. Okay, so d rho v plus pdv minus tds equals zero. Okay, next I'll use that pdv plus vdp e of dv. So therefore, this pdv is d of pv minus the missing term. Okay. So this is d of rho plus p d minus p minus t ds equals zero. I think if I did everything correctly. Yeah, and actually I'll just move this over to the other side. So this equals tds. Okay, so therefore we can just solve for ds. We just move this t over to the other side. Okay. The next step that we'll use is the fact that in equilibrium, the following relation holds. Okay, so in equilibrium, we have that dP is rho plus P over T. The statement might not be obvious. I was thinking about just demonstrating this to you just by using the explicit expressions that we have for rho and p in terms of the distribution function. But Kendrick said that he might assign that to you guys as a homework problem. So therefore, I'll skip the demonstration, but it's really straightforward. Okay. So then let's use this fact now here. Okay. So good. So now let's plug in this expression for dp here. Okay, where it appears. Okay, I'll just write it out. So d of rho plus p d over t is v over t dp, which is rho plus p over t t. Right. Okay, we can recognize this as a total derivative. This works to say so this is just d of rho plus p d over t. Right? The dt gives us this minus dt over t squared. So therefore, okay, yeah, so all this was equal to ds, the change in the entropy. Therefore, the entropy is just a thing inside the brackets. Okay, so the total entropy is just rho plus p over t times volume. Okay, now it's easy to verify for yourselves, you know, that this total entropy is indeed conserved. Okay, you know, so for example, you can evaluate S dot Okay, it'll evolve terms with rho dot, with p dot, t dot, and v dot. Okay, for rho dot, you can just use the continuity equation. For p dot, we can use this expression to relate p dot in terms of t dot. For v dot, you just use the Hubble expansion, right? So v dot is just 8, 3 hv over, yeah, something like that. And then t dot again. And yeah, and so if you just work this out, you can verify for yourselves that indeed ds dt indeed is zero, which means that, which means that, as you might expect, the entropy is indeed adiabatically conserved. Okay, and of course, that should make physical sense because, you know, so the total entropy must be conserved in the absence of any kind of external sources of heating. This is so this is the entropy of, like, the universe. There are no external sources of heating. Okay, so the reason why this is useful is that now we have a conservation law, right? And so whenever we have a conservation law, that makes things easier to compute, right? You know, it's easier to compute the evolution when we have a known conservation law, okay? Right, so we've already computed how the energy density and the pressure evolve as the universe expands. And so now using conservation of the entropy, that'll then also then tell us how the temperature evolves as the universe expands, okay? And so to see how to use this in practice, let's just go through a simple example. So first, let's define the entropy density, little s, as entropy per unit volume, okay, which is, as we see here, rho plus p divided by t. All right. For a relativistic species, we already saw somewhere over here that rho was, you know, pi squared over 30 times g times t to the fourth, and then times 1 or 7/8 for bosons and for fermions, right? And we also saw that for relativistic species, p was just rho over 3. Okay, so therefore, the entropy density then is just 4/3 rho over t. Okay, so one of these t's gets canceled. And so in the end, this works out to the entropy density is just 2 pi squared over 45 times g t cubed. And then again, the same 1 or 7/8, okay, for bosons and for fermions. Okay, so that's the so that's the entropy density for one species. The total will be the sum over all the species, right? That sum will be dominated again by the relativistic species. Okay, which should make sense, you know, just like the energy density was. So let's write out the total entropy density. Okay, so it's just a sum over all of the relativistic species of the same thing. Okay, 2 pi squared over 45. So I'll just sum over the relativistic bosons of 2 pi squared over 45. And now weighted by t cubed instead of t squared, and a sum over the relativistic fermions of 7/8 of that, okay, gi ti cubed. And then just like g star that we had before for the energy density, we'll define a similar g star. We'll call it g star s for the entropy. Okay, so g star s times the same, this factor, 2 pi squared over 45 e photon cubed. Okay, so the reasoning again, you know, is the exact same as, you know, as our definition of g star for the energy density. Now we just have this convenient number g star s for the entropy. Okay. So therefore, our expression for the total entropy then is that S total is energy density, entropy density total times volume, which therefore is proportional to this G star S, okay, T cubed times volume, and volume goes like A cubed. And this whole thing is constant, right? This whole thing is adiabatically conserved. Okay? So what this says is that when this G star S is a constant in time, the temperature evolves in time just like 1 over A cubed, right? Everyone see that?
But G star has dynamics, right? We cannot consider G star as constant.
We cannot consider G star as constant. But during the times when G star S is constant, during those times, then we have that the temperature of the interacting plasma scales in time like 1 over A. But as you say, G star S cannot be constant. And why is that? I mean, well, there are times when it's constant, but it can't always be constant. Yeah. And so why is that?
Species go from relativistic to non-relativistic.
Exactly, that's right. Okay, yeah, exactly. This is, yeah, right. So this is a sum over the relativistic species. As the temperature evolves, temperature eventually will fall below the rest mass of one of the species. When that happens, that species starts to disappear. Okay? The degrees of freedom in that species have to go somewhere. They get transferred to the other species, increasing their number density of those other species, which therefore has to increase their temperature. Okay? Therefore, normally, temperature is just falling like 1 over A. Until you hit where the temperature is equal to, well, is near the rest mass of one of the species, okay? During that time, the temperature stops decreasing for a while that species starts to annihilate or just to get transferred to the other relativistic species, raising their temperature, okay? Keeping this temperature from falling for a while until eventually, the disappearing species has like entirely disappeared, and afterwards then the temperature then resumes falling like 1 over A, okay? And so each time that a species goes non-relativistic and disappears while it's in equilibrium, the same process will happen again and again, okay? Good. Let's see. Yeah, I'm good. Oh, we're almost out of time. Okay, so now let's go through an example of this, which is the main thing I wanted to get to today. And I'm glad we didn't run entirely out of time.
I didn't understand why is it discrete. To me, it should be continuously this process happens. Why it's like happens in discrete time?
Yeah, because when you're far from this time, the temperature is well above the rest mass, right? The Boltzmann suppression factor of E to the minus M over T.
We have the spectrum of masses, right? Or the
yeah.
masses are discrete. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, okay, good. So, right, so in the standard model, which you guys have seen, is there a continuum of masses, or do particles have discrete masses? Yeah, right. Right, so electron has like a half MeV mass, right? At the other masses, like the pion is like 100 MeV, you know.
These particles are elementary particles. They cannot be, like, I don't know, atoms and this stuff.
Oh, actually, nothing here has said that they have to be elementary particles. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So all these expressions that I've written down for the equilibrium, abundance, etc., all this doesn't assume that they are. Nothing here has assumed that they are. Elementary particles. As long as they can disappear, as long as they can convert into other species, all this will happen.
So the mass is continuous, right? They can kind of...
The total, yeah, stress energy has to be conserved. Right, yeah. And so that'll limit the ability of species to remain in equilibrium in some sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. Okay, but in the last, like, minute, let me just go through one very important illustration of what we just did, which is for electrons and positrons. Here we are. Actually, I'll just stay here. Okay, so I mentioned yesterday, right? So electrons and positrons have rest masses of around half an MeV. And so therefore, when temperatures start getting smaller than that, then those particles cannot persist as long as they remain in equilibrium with the rest of the plasma, such as like photons, okay? So here, let's just write that out. So ME is 0.511 megaelectron volts. Okay. We said before that the average energy per particle is something like 3 times the temperature, right? So therefore, once the temperature falls below, I don't know, like 0.1 or 0.2 MeV, okay? Then processes like 2 gamma producing an E plus E minus pair, those processes cannot continue at a high rate anymore. Just because there aren't enough sufficiently energetic photons around to pair produce, you know, positrons and electrons. Okay, so this process stops occurring, but the other process, the reverse process, happily continues occurring. And so therefore, positrons and electrons start disappearing. They just turn into photons. Okay? So this decreases the number density of E plus E minus, increases the number of photons, therefore raises the photon temperature, and therefore raises the temperature of the other species that the photons are in kinetic equilibrium with. So we said over here, okay, so while this is happening, the temperature stops falling for a while, it plateaus for a while, and then once the E plus E minuses have basically all gone away, then it resumes. So therefore, if we compare to the previous behavior, we'll have some higher temperature afterwards. Okay, so let's work out what that higher temperature is, using this, using this conservation of entropy. Okay, so before, the E plus E minuses went away, we had electrons, positrons, and photons. Okay, so therefore G star S is a sum over those species. Okay, so it's a sum over the photon GS and also the electron positron ES. Okay. What are these numbers? So for photons, G is what? Do you recall the number of, what's the number of polarization states for photons? 2. Okay. For electrons and positrons are fermions, so we have a 7/8 out front. Okay. We have electrons and positrons, and they have how many spin states?
Each 2.
Okay. Electrons and positrons, so there's 4 of those. Okay, so in total we get 11 halves, E4. Okay? Afterwards, we have only photons left over, no more E plus E minus. And so after...
Wouldn't there also be that temperature factor with electrons, because the temperature of electron by temperature of gamma?
Oh, that's right. However, they do have the same temperature because, as we saw before, Thomson scattering is extremely efficient, right? So necessarily, the photons remain in kinetic equilibrium with the positrons and the electrons while they're annihilating. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes, that factor of T is just 1. Yeah. Okay. And then afterwards, we only have photons left over, so afterwards we have 2 for the total G. So the ratio, okay, so gamma after S were. Yeah, okay, sorry. Right, so the total entropy is constant. Okay, so therefore, afterwards, all this entropy turned into photon entropy. Okay, so before we had, this factor proportional to 2. Afterwards, we had proportional to 11/4 because everything that was in the plus E minuses went into the photons. Okay. This is 11/2. Okay, so this ratio is therefore 11/4.
Should it be the opposite, after than before?
Sorry, yeah, this is in the photons specifically.
Okay, but this was after, right? It's after the species
after
disappeared, it becomes two.
Yes.
I didn't explain this well. Okay. So everything that was present before in the plus E minuses is now going to be afterwards present in the photons.
Yeah.
Right?
If other side is temperature, right? Temperature over temperature. You want to do something like that?
Well, that's where I'm going. Yeah. I mean, right. Yeah. Right. Right, right. So in the end, what we'll get is that T times A afterwards, okay, for the photons, will be 11/4 to the 1/3 times T times A before for the photons, okay? That's the factor by which the photon temperature has increased, okay, because the entropy in the photons had to go up by that factor of 11/4. I said this too fast. I can see that there are confused faces.
I think it might be easier just write S total before over S total after is 1.
That's right.
Then upstairs you have something like 11/2 times T before to the third. And downstairs you have like 2 times T over the third.
Right.
And that it's 1. So we can figure out what's that ratio.
Yeah, yeah. Perhaps I was skipping too many steps here, to try and save time. But physically, do you guys follow the reasoning? Right? This is the factor by which the photon entropy had to increase due to absorbing all of the E plus E minus entropy. Right? And so therefore, knowing that the entropy goes like T cubed, therefore, temperature afterwards, this increase in height, okay? This increase in height is a factor of 11/4 to the 1/3. Okay, comparing this scaling to this scaling. Okay, numerically this works out to around a factor of 1.4. Okay, that might not seem terribly exciting to you, but it turns out that this factor actually has observable consequences. The reason for this is that besides the photons and electrons, there are also neutrinos. I was hoping to get to today, but we can't, okay? Neutrinos decoupled from the rest of the plasma at a time just before this. Okay, so this time happens at a temperature of around 0.1, 0.2 MeV. The neutrinos happen to freeze out, decouple from the rest of the plasma at around a temperature of around like 1 MeV, okay? So slightly before this, okay? After they decouple, okay, what happens to them, okay? So before decoupling, they were in equilibrium with everything else, their temperature is just behaving the same way, okay? After they decouple, what happens to their behavior, to their temperature? What do you guys think? It'll just continue on the same thing that it was doing before, that's right, okay? Now, after they decouple, they can no longer now absorb any of the entropy that the E plus E minus annihilating pairs are dumping into the plasma. Therefore, they don't follow the track that the photons are doing. They just continue along this track, right? So therefore, in the end, after the annihilation of the positrons and electrons, what we get in the end is that the neutrino temperature is smaller than the photon temperature. Exactly this factor of like 1.4. Okay.
But then neutrinos should carry away some of the entropy. In this calculation, we use that S total before and S total after are the same.
That's right.
But then afterwards, if that plot does not contain neutrino entropy.
Oh, no. No. So the total does. The neutrinos are just doing whatever they're doing, right? There's happily marching along in straight lines, conserving their number, right? Whereas the photons cannot conserve their number because of all of the extra photons being created, all of the extra energy being dumped into the photon plasma, by the annihilation of the positron electron pairs. Okay, and that's why the entropy in the photons increases, but the neutrino entropy does not increase. That's because there's no way for the E plus E minus pairs to turn into neutrinos because they've already decoupled. just slightly beforehand. Okay, so the photon temperature today is like 3 Kelvin. Therefore, had the neutrinos remained non-relativistic, you know, massless all the way down to today, their temperature today would be around 2 Kelvin. It turns out, though, that today they are going non-relativistic, and so therefore you can't really describe them as having a temperature. We could have shown that if we had more time, but Kendrick perhaps next time can show that to you. Okay, you know, so for the neutrinos, you can no longer describe them as having a thermal distribution with a Fermi Dirac distribution, you know, with some temperature, right? That's only relatively recently. For most of the universe's history, they were still relativistic. And so even though they were decoupled, they were just freely streaming, doing whatever they were doing, they still had a thermal distribution in their relic abundance. Okay, sorry that we're over time again. We can stop here.